2008 seminar, lecture 4. These are the topics we'll talk about this hour. Why science can take such a strong viewpoint about stem cells and how they function. Magnification of body cells reveal proliferation of stem cells. Studies show how a stem cell affects the other non-stem cells near it. And undifferentiated stem cell is a panacea, a cure-all, a universal remedy, a magic potent to any cell near it. These are pretty powerful statements, pretty powerful ideas, but they work. And it is what is being done currently in the scientific community. In the previous century, most of the work of discovery in science and medicine was done in Europe and America. Now, work is being done in India and in China and in Japan and many other countries, all of whom have different values or different ethics than the Western world countries, you might call them, of Africa and Europe and America. Because in those countries, they have a lot of stops on utilizing different things that they feel might be disadvantageous to human beings. That they might destroy bodies just to get information, just to get stem cells from them. And of course, they do that. They do destroy bodies just to get stem cells from them, more than we will ever know. But that's not the issue we're talking about. We're talking about the issue that stem cells do work and what they do. And this is merely a start on that subject. The values and the ethics of worldwide medical societies, they'll fall into place and be brought in line with, you might say, Western ethics, but maybe not. Maybe life will take a different value. Maybe life will take a different point of view, and people will not be so concerned about that. We have a point that will come up later in our program, which tells about the menstrual cells and how they are just flooding with stem cells, readily available. And that has only recently come to the attention of scientists, so we don't have a lot of reports on how well they're doing it and how well they're applying it. But we'll be hearing it. We'll be hearing it. For the moment, why science can take such a strong viewpoint about stem cells and how they function. These stem cells have been put into a petri dish. They've been put into a particular controlled situation to find out how they function and if they function. And they've been used on mice. How would you like that? They take a mouse and they work with them with a stem cell, and they can increase his lifespan and his health. By starving him, they can increase his lifespan 5 times, they say, or better. This is just what research they've done. Now, why don't we do that with man? We don't do that with man because we're afraid that it's too tough, too sensitive. There are many people who are, in their 80s, and they are very wealthy, and they would like to have the ability to live longer. They like to live longer and spend all their money and use their wealth and so forth. And they would like to have some of these things tried out on them. But science is so reluctant to work on these wealthy people because these wealthy people are a two-edged sword. If it doesn't work, then they're going to sue the pants off the scientists and cut them out of business and keep them from being more effective. Even though they said, the man or the person involved said, you can do that. Use me as a guinea pig. But the rest of the world objects, and the other aspects, they object. And so, as you probably have heard stories about people who help people get out of cars that have been in an accident. And as they help them get out of the car, they sprain themselves a little bit as they're getting out, and then they blame the person who helped them get out, and they sue the person who helped them get out. No, how utterly outrageous. I mean, and even in fire, the car is on fire, and somebody courageously comes over and saves your life, gets you out of the car before it blows up, you know, and then you sue them. This has happened a number of times that it isn't funny. And so the Good Samaritan, you've heard of that, the Good Samaritan ceases to be Good Samaritans anymore. You're afraid that if you be nice to somebody, you're liable to hurt them. Now, the medics, when they come, the paramedics, when they come with their ambulance and their things, they are so careful to move a person onto the gurney in such a way that nothing is disturbed, you know, that they don't twist the body or in any way get blamed for something when they're trying to help the person. And of course, it's a very touchy thing. It's a very sensitive thing. And the paramedics are trained very specially in that. So this too falls into the scientific community in coming up with these wonderful things that they do. Now, some of you saw the movie Bleep last night. I'd seen it many times. And in the movie Bleep, they show how many things happen through the utilization of the body, the cells and the nerves, and how thought is such a powerful media to control the body and control how it's being used. And this same thing is true with the stem cells. Now, Years ago, I was going to say when I was in high school and college, but that was, I'm 25, so that was long ago. So just years ago, the scientific community knew about stem cells. They knew about these things. And in the 60s is where they first started working on them, but they knew about them back in the 1800s. They knew about stem cells, and they knew how they worked on people, and they knew that when the stem cell was inserted into certain things, when these special little cells that they could interpret, they couldn't see them too well because they hadn't studied them and put a name on them, but when they put them into things like a mouse, the mouse all of a sudden became a totally different being, but it was an uncontrolled being. The mouse grew and expanded and did all sorts of not pleasant things, and so they were afraid to try that in man, which is understandable. They want to get the kinks out of it. They want to understand how to do it. But the donating people, the people who donate money so scientists can do the research, were reluctant to give money to their project because they didn't want to be known as someone who was promoting something that was going to be a loser. They're all wanting to be winners, as you know. So that slowed down the development of the awareness of stem cells over the years, even though it was definitely there, definitely perfectly there. Just like the light bulb was known for 100 years before it was finally brought out. But it had to be perfected. It had to be done in such a way so that the carbon tungsten filament inside of a vacuum area would allow the light to burn for a length of time that made it worthwhile having a lamp. Otherwise, the candles were, or gas flames were perfectly adequate. So this is how the story of the stem cell history goes along too. Slow but sure. And now they definitely know that it does it. They know now that using a stem cell, an undifferentiated stem cell that has not been defined as to its purpose, and they put it into anything, whether it's the liver, the heart, the lungs, or anything, it will rejuvenate that particular organ and bring it back to its original purity and integrity. They don't use that particular term, but they bring it back to its usefulness, and its usefulness is its original purity and integrity. And as they bring it back to that, then that organ, at the same time, begins to spread this stem cell activity, which it is, its perfection, throughout the entire body. that takes a little longer. So, scientists are attempting to put stem cells into various areas of the body where they have been aged, where age has taken over, and they have brought the aged body back to its original purity and integrity, to its earlier youthful beingness. And that's quite exciting. That's quite remarkable. For me to talk about this and give you just the surface information of this is interesting, and for you to research it even more deeply would be fascinating. But no matter what story you read about these things, they're like miracle stories. And no matter what stories you read about it, it's just the foundation work. Because the foundation work is finally allowed to be published after they had run enough tests on it to prove that it was not going to be in any way deleterious, contrary to the best interests of the people involved. And that's a long program, but I don't like to take the long program. I like to take the shortcut. But we're not dealing here for ourselves with taking a stem cell out and putting it in like that. We're dealing with our mind is that which controls the activity of the stem cell, of the body itself. So when we can learn to relax, learn to be at peace, learn to just let go like that, we have taken away the tensions that are so bothersome. Now, those of you who saw the film last night, you saw how the peptides were getting all excited and dashing around doing all sorts of silly things. But they weren't so silly because that's what they were doing, going around messing up the whole body. But then, what happened? The lead character in the story, the lady, Amanda, she says, "I hate you, I hate you, I hate you, I hate you." You know, she got it out of her system, you know. And then after she got it out of her system, she said, the thought came to her mind of what the man said. If thoughts can do that to water, what can they do to the mind? What can they do to man? And that came to her at just that point when she was most highly distressed. And then she started painting hearts all over her body. And she changed her whole attitude about herself. She did not take any pills. She did not take any stem cells or anything like that. She just changed her whole attitude. And her whole attitude helped her revitalize herself, bring herself back into the wholeness that she was. Now, for years I've been telling people, every time you get anxious, every time you have anxiety, all of the enzymes and all of the muscles in your body and your legs and your chest and your, and everything, they tighten up. They tighten up. And you have a squirt bottle. You know what a squirt bottle is? It's a bottle that squirts ketchup or something like that, you know. So you have the squirt bottle. That's these enzymes. And when you squirt them, you think it's going to squirt it out. But what it really does, it shuts it off. It shuts off the flow of enzymes into your body, which are the balancing organisms that take place to balance your body. So, when you can train yourself to be balanced, train yourself to be relaxed and peaceful, then the enzymes that are designed to keep your body in perfect balance, perfect harmony, those enzymes can go to work. But they cannot go to work if you're so tense and so tied up in a knot, because you closed all the vessels, you closed all the openings, and they cannot squirt out their enzymes into the body. They don't work exactly like that, but that's the concept that they work under. And so this is why psychologists, and this is why counselors, do their best to work with people to help them relax. They say the greatest killer on the face of the earth is tension. And why is tension the greatest killer? Because it shuts off the body. Tension goes, you know, that's it, you know, choke yourself to death, and then when you die, don't you? You have taken away your air. You have t- tensed yourself. And if you can relax, what do they do when a person is dying of choking? They relax them. Do you know one of the most wonderful ways to relax a person who's choking? Not that you'll ever have to experience it. What do you think it might be? Just if you could have a vague idea.
Taking deep breaths.
Say it loud so I can hear it.
Taking deep breath.
Taking deep breath. That's an important part of it. But the thing that makes a choking person stop choking the fastest, they don't pronounce this too often, is if you tickle them. If you tickle them, they completely relax. They completely lose all control of their tension that is causing them to choke. Really. I come up to people and I'm often tickling them and I'm, you know, touching their tickle bones in their side or something like that. You know, and they don't want me to do that because they lose control. They're not in control. When you're being tickled, you're not in control of the thing looking serious. And so, but really, if you ever have anyone who is having a difficulty, if you can tickle them, if you can do something silly to them to make them relax, to make them breathe deeply, like you said, and when you can do that, then beautiful things happen. And, of course, that's what you want to do. Now, Ibine, is it? Ibine?
Ibine.
Yes. Ibine was saying, relax, 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 relax. Now, why was she saying that? Do you think sometime in her life she was irritated over something and she told herself, oh, come on now, relax, it's not worth worrying about. And dunk! Immediately, all of those poisons that were flowing into your body and all of the lack of balance of enzymes began to start in harmony again. Do you know that in your body you excrete enough poisons from enough different sources that could kill you in an instant? If you didn't have the perfect flow of all the vital juices of your body, you could be dead in an instant. Because those poisons are in your body, and they're necessary, the body thinks, for the operation of the body. But when you get tense, you close off your flowing, you close off your balancing. You pour a little bit of this in, and a little bit of this in, and a little bit of this in, and now the little bit of this and this and this aren't there. You just pour in the little bit of this, and that's the poison. And it isn't balanced out with these other juices that are necessary to the body. Now, people don't tell you that. The doctors don't tell you that. The medical authorities don't tell you that. But the reason they don't tell you that is because they think it'll worry you. They think it'll make you upset. Well, it will make you upset. But the thing is, what they could be telling you is learn how to relax. Learn how to be at peace. Learn how to be in charge of how the fluids are flowing in your body. Really. You can do that. And you do that many times. But now you want to do that very effectively for yourself, because that way all of the functions of your body can operate beautifully. There are many people who are bedridden. They're in bed and can't get up and walk around. And they're healthy. Their bodies are okay. They can move their arms and legs and stuff. They can get up and go to the bathroom, but they can't walk around much. Well, why are they bedridden? Why are they bedridden when their body is basically healthy? You will find that in virtually every case, they were told by their doctor or somebody, basically the doctor, that you won't be able to walk again. Or their wife or their husband teed them off so badly, they decide, I'm never going to get up again. I'm not going to walk again. Silly! We do it to ourselves, to hurt ourselves, to hurt somebody else. Because someone has said something unkind to us. How long does it take you to get over a snit? How long does it take you to get over being angry at somebody? When someone makes you upset, how long does it take you to get over it and say, so what? You know? It usually takes a long time. And the reason it takes a long time is because you feel self-righteous. And your self-righteousness keeps you from having the proper harmonious flow of fluids in your body. You cut it off. You just cut it off. Okay, what's a headache? What's a headache?
Tension.
Yeah. Thank you. A headache is tension. Now, what does tension do? Tension stops the flow of blood in a harmonious way through the body. It blocks it here and boom, it gathers there, and that's what makes the tension. Now, what is it that you do when you use this acupressure puncture point between your thumb and your forefinger? What happens there? It releases the pressure, the tension. It releases them. And when it releases them, it's over. Now, I have a splitting headache. I have a splitting migraine headache. And I can't do anything. And you go like this to the person, and you don't say anything. You know? And you go like this, and then I have a splitting headache. What are we having for dinner? What's going on over here and there? They instantly change. They don't know that the headache is now gone. They don't know it. Because when they were having the headache, they were experiencing the headache and they were all wrapped up in it. But the minute you touch them like that, the headache went away. And they don't realize it's gone. That might be considered close to a spiritual type healing, you know. They don't know it's gone. So they change the subject. Now they don't change the subject. They just talk. Before they were talking about this, now they're talking about this. They didn't change. They were not talking about a headache before. They don't remember that. Because you don't remember when you're... If I were to ask you, how many of you when you were children had an accident of some sort that was very painful? And then I say, okay, now do you remember the pain? You don't remember it. That's long since put away. You know why you might remember it? Because your mother told you that you had excruciating pain, and she said you had excruciating pain, and you had excruciating pain, and she told you this week after month after year of your life. And you don't remember it, but your mother reminds you of it, and so you tell what your mother reminded you of, but you don't remember it yourself. You really don't. And this is true of a lot of things about us. And this is true of a lot of things about us, about our health and about our welfare. We don't remember any of these things, but people remind us. This is why I like everybody to experience a spiritual healing if possible. A spiritual healing is when you have a complete catharsis, a complete change, and you are completely healed, and you don't remember that you were ever ill. Your parents, family, and friends don't remember that you were ever ill. The hospital doesn't have any record of you ever having been there, even though you had been there a great deal. It is washed from the record. I say, how can that be? Easy.
Yeah.
Easy. You see, we make things impossible, and they're not impossible. We make things improbable, and they're not improbable. What if it wasn't there? What if you were returned to your original purity and integrity, and so to speak, you were starting over again at the point of your purity? Not bad. If you started over at your point of purity, would you have had the experience before? No. You wouldn't have it. Now, the things that I'm saying, in the Art and Science of Holiness, this is the first course of the University of Healing, what do we teach in that is that God is neither logical nor reasonable. And that's true. The law, God, principle, is neither logical nor reasonable. There is no reason for the number of stars in the sky and the number of sand pebbles on the beach and so forth. There's no reason for that. There's no reason for the number of people on earth. And when the United States President said, God must have loved the poor people, he made so many of them. Well, he didn't make them. They made themselves. And of course, they are as God made themselves. So I guess God made them. But the point is, they made themselves. Now, they also could make themselves rich. Abraham Lincoln was the president who said that, and he was a poor boy when he's being born, raised up, and he read by firelight, he studied his books by firelight, big deal, and there are many people around the world who are living with that condition. You here in Nigeria, with your off and on electricity, are experiencing that to a large degree. You have to do your studies during the daytime when there's light to read by. Because you can't always have flashlights, and you can't always have generators, and you can't always have other things. But that's your choice. That's your choice. And one of these days, you're going to free your generators from your nation and have them so you can have electricity all the time. And why not? Why not? And there are more sources for electricity than just the ones that you're using. The solar sources and the sources of the ocean and many other sources. And one of these days you'll have those too. But if you read the life and teachings of the masters of the Far East, you'll read about a temple in there not made by hands. And whenever the masters would walk into this temple to read or study or do anything, immediately it would be illumined inside. And when they walked out, it was dark again. Now that's outrageous. Impossible. Oh, really? Really? Think about it. How many lamasaries in Tibet have electricity or had electricity over the years, you know? How do these people work in their cells? How do they exist? How do they exist in that cold, cold country with very little robes, very little clothing? And yet you don't hear of any of them freezing to death. Interesting. All my thought. They say, I am warm. I am comfortable. I feel great. And then they are. You see, we have that to work with on our stem cells. Our stem cells merely say to us that if we go back to our original purity, then everything was returned to the original purity and integrity. The stem cell is the undifferentiated brand new cell, which is itself a powerhouse. And it is put into, let's say, the liver, and it rejuvenates the liver. Now, how does it do that? How does it rejuvenate the liver? Well, we don't have that knowledge just yet. But I would imagine it rejuvenates the liver by being the paramount aspect. The paramount condition in the liver is that stem cell, tiny, tiny little thing, which just goes all over. Do you know what a strychnine is? It's a poison, a very powerful poison. You take one drop of strychnine, and you could put it in a city water supply, and you kill all the people. One drop. Amazing, isn't it? One drop can do such a vast amount of evil, you know. Well, in your body, one drop of many of these chemicals, which are just tinctures, the tiniest portion, are necessary for the proper operation of your body. Well, now the stem cell itself is a tiny tincture, you might say. A tincture that is put into the liver, and it goes through the entire liver and says, we got a new show, boys. We got a new director. I'm the new director. And I say, let's start over fresh. Start over at the beginning. Original purity and integrity. We're going for broke. And so all the old attitudes, the old stem cells, they back away because they know that that new stem cell, that undifferentiated cell, has the power to carry out its miracle. Now, its miracle is that it is the original purity and integrity. But it doesn't know what it's the original purity and integrity of. When you put it in the liver, it'll be the original purity and integrity of the liver. When you put it in the heart, it'll be the, because it's an undifferentiated cell, it'll be the original purity and integrity of the heart, or the lungs, or wherever, you know? Isn't it fascinating? Truly amazing. truly amazing how our life and functions work. What did we talk about? The atom, so tiny. Trillions of atoms on the tip of your finger, trillions. And if they were all squashed together, my
boom,
boom, yeah, nothing. They say all the matter of the universe, it were all compacted together, it would be no larger than this here, but it would be so heavy because it has all that weight in it, according to what the scientists tell us. It has all that weight in it. It's all compacted together like that. Every little atom and every little thing, and all the space that they have in them are no longer there. But that's just an academic thought. That's not necessarily something that could ever be practiced. See, this is what a lot of things are. They're academic thoughts that can't be practiced. But we know it's a principle. And we take that principle and we put it to work for ourselves so that we can have a body that's absolutely fantastic. We can have a mind that's absolutely fantastic. If the children of today do the things that they do so beautifully, and if the same children of yesterday were asked to do those things, they couldn't do it. They couldn't do it because they are not prepared to be what the children today are. The children today are geniuses. They can do virtually anything. Oh, there's some that struggle a little bit, but they can do anything. They don't know you can't do it. Yes, it's true, when we were children, we took apart things because we wanted to experiment and learn, and our parents didn't like it. But today, our parents, when they have trouble, they call us, or they call the children to come in and repair it because they can't figure out how to do it. And the children do it because they don't know how. And if anybody believes in them, and they want to be believed in, if anybody believes in them, they can do magic miracles, super miracles, because they are the creators of anything they want to do. We've seen it in the autistic child. Where does he get that wonderful genius to do the things that he does? It's true, it's not in every area of his life, but in any area. If it's in any area, it could be in all areas. If that autistic child has that genius and that, the scientists might study to find out how to take that genius and turn it into itself to manufacture and bring forth that ideal child who is normal, and maybe normal isn't what we want him to be. Who is super, who is a genius. Now, the Agabwas are a very strange family. They have a daughter who loves mathematics. And tup, 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 tup. No problem with it whatsoever. And so she's teaching, she's in a bank and working in mathematics and doing well, but it doesn't tittle at her. So she goes to school and studies mathematics, become a mathematics teacher, a professor of mathematics. And so now she's teaching mathematics. She just loves it. Now, what's the next step for her going to be? Where is she going to use that mathematics? As of itself, it is just a principle of learning, the principle of understanding and revealing it. But who knows what she's going to do? Because for her, it's so simple to work in these very complex fields. Now, what's her son going to be like? He's a little monster. He's into everything. Ooh, he's fantastic. Now, is he brilliant? Oh, they don't even know how brilliant he is because they have no testings for him yet, you know. But they'll find out. And what about their son, Ugo? He wanted to become a medical doctor. He studied for it, became one. Then he wanted to become a psychiatrist. And in a few short months, he became a psychiatrist. Then he wanted to be top man in his office. So he went to the office, and he was second man in the office. Second psychiatrist in this clinic. Fantastic. Now, they had two psychiatrists in the clinic, and he was the second one. So you say, oh, that wasn't so big. No. But you see, he made a mistake. He said he wanted to be a top man in the clinic. He should have said he wanted to be top man in a big clinic, if that's what he wanted. Now, maybe he wanted the little one. But the thing is, we have to watch our words. Do you want to be top man in a big operation, or you want to be top man in a little operation? Do you want to be this or that? What do you want to be? How are you going to put your stem cells to work? You see, we've been ignoring during this seminar the things we talked about the last seminar. And the last seminar we talked about what?
The 10,000 stem cells in the brain.
That stem cells in the brain. Now, we're not going to ignore that. But the 10,000 stem cells in the brain that they say are born every single day, who's directing those stem cells? Are they now in the brain?
Yeah.
But why is it they have trouble penetrating the brain and revitalizing the brain and making it brand new? Why do they have trouble? Because, yes, our thought. We are not telling them what to do. We are acting like normal human beings with normal problems. You haven't learned to grow up and be as good as your children are, you know? We want to learn to be as dynamic and powerful as our children, and nothing is impossible to us. So, the stem cells in our brain, the 10,000 every day that are freshly new, are waiting to be told what to do. We don't tell them. So, when we don't tell them, then they go and they play with the rest of the kids on the block. They play with the other stem cells, the other cells in the brain, which are happy or unhappy, or which are successful or unsuccessful, or whatever they may be. And they don't know what way to go, so they go the way that all the rest of them are going. We want to tell the brain stem cells what we want to expect out of them, what we want to have out of them. Now, we tell the stem cells in our brain what we want from them by just plain telling them, just plain saying to our brain, okay, I am brilliant, I am fantastic, I am glorious. We tell our brain that we are happy. We tell our brain that we're healthy. We tell our brain we're brilliant, 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 brilliant. And don't hold your tongue back when you say it. I am brilliant. Mean it. Mean it. Because it'll do it. Now, I'm going to give you a little glass here. And you're going to take this glass, and you're going to drink the fluid in it. Now, be careful. Because when you drink that fluid, you're going to be entirely changed from head to foot to your original purity and integrity. You will be absolutely wise. You will be absolutely strong and powerful. Your body will be the ideal form. Your mind will be the mind of the universe. You follow me? Now, you say, well, I'll take a sip of that. And I say, no, you won't. You won't take a sip of it because you're afraid of it. And the reason that you're afraid of it is because you think that it might do something to you to make you lose your past. And all of us are afraid of losing our past. We're afraid of amnesia. We're afraid of being knocked out and forgetting the entire past. Forgetting our family and our friends and so forth. Well, just like I said to Daniel, you know, who knows how many wonderful women are going to surface in your world now that you are a different person. Now that you like yourself and now that you respect every woman as an absolute magnificent being. What's going to happen? New things will come up, but I like to go back to the old that I remember, and you know. And when you go back to the old, what do you do?
You relive it. Hmm? You relive the past.
You resist it.
You relive it.
You relive it. Yeah. You relive the past. You resist the present. And what you do is you are afraid to let go of those things that you knew. Now, I tell everyone at campus, and every one of our students who want to hear it, as I've told you, take all of your photographs and destroy them. Take all of the history and destroy it. Oh, you know, they may want to write the story of my life, a famous man. Forget it. If you're a famous man, you don't care if they write the story of your life or not. You're famous. You're doing your thing. You're doing your thing. You don't care if anybody knows anything about your past. People come to the campus of the university, and we have a lot of books that I have studied, and we have a lot of books that were given to us. And I say to Ellen, who is the chairman of the board there, I say, Ellen, I think that we should take these books and deep six them. We should throw them out. And she says, well, they're good books, they're neat books, they're new books, they're whatever, you know. And I say, but they're yesterday. They're not today. They're not books that we are studying today. So, you have books written, say, 10 years ago. And the books are about how that person achieved greatness 10 years ago. Is that how you're going to do it today?
No,
not at all. But why do you hang on to the books? Now, I have a book of unicorns. A unicorn is a horse with a horn on its head. And fictitious, they say, but this author and photographer said that these are pictures he's really taken of unicorns. And people say, well, maybe he created them or whatever he did, but they're unicorns. Now, isn't it fascinating that people need to know about unicorns as they're studying the philosophy that I'm teaching? Fascinating, isn't it? And now, Findhorn, if you are familiar with it in Scotland, and on Findhorn, some people went, and at the ocean shore, they made a garden. And in that garden, they grew everything under the sun, where it should not grow. The salt water had made the soil intolerable for growing plants and so forth, but they grew them. They had the devas helping them. They had the spirit fairies helping them to make it grow. That was their belief. And it grew. They grew roses, flowers, cabbages, and everything else under the sun, bigger than anywhere else in England. And people from all over England came up to Findhorn to see what they'd done. Now, we have books on that. Now, isn't that fascinating? How did they do it? Did these divas really come in there and do it, or was it their thought? Did they believe that it could be done? And was it done?
Yes.
Now, see, these are just evidences of miracles, evidences of thought at work. Now, what is it that Jesus had with his disciples? Jesus' disciples were a bunch of good-for-nothing characters. Jesus said to them, go out and preach and teach and heal and raise the dead, you know? And they went out and they couldn't do it. And they came back and they said, you can do it, but we can't. That's what those books are. You can do it, but we can't. The books are something we can talk about, but we don't demonstrate it from our own life. You can do it, but we can't. So, Jesus said to him, hey, do it. Do it. Go out and do it. Believe in yourself. You can do it. You don't need me. You can do it. Now, why was it they couldn't do it? Because they didn't listen to Jesus. And what did he say?
Believe in yourself.
He said, it is done unto you according to your belief. Believe in yourself. He said, it's done unto you according to your belief. Believe in yourself. It's yourself that's doing this, not somebody else. Now, if I see you whole and perfect, you may not see yourself whole and perfect, but I see you whole and perfect. So in my world, you're whole and perfect. And in your world, you'd be wise to be whole and perfect too. But the thing is, if you're not, then that's, I don't even know it. You're blind to me. I cannot see you unless you're whole and perfect. You're only whole and perfect in my world. You say, well, that's contrary to truth. Is it? Is it? Doctors are proving this is true all the time. You're whole and perfect. So then the doctor goes in, he takes the tumor away, and you're whole and perfect. Well, you were always whole and perfect. You just had something there that didn't belong. And it was a tumor. And it was a thought. Your thought that said that you weren't whole and perfect made you not whole. If you had gotten rid of the thought that you weren't whole and perfect and started saying, I'm whole and perfect, I'm whole and perfect, that tumor would atrophy and disappear because it was given no attention. You know that things that don't get attention go away. They just go away. And this is the way life is. This is the way all these things are. This is the way the miracle of these things are. They're fantastic. So this is what we want to do. We want to learn to put that program into motion for ourselves and enjoy the benefit of it. Oh my, there's so many things that could be shared with you on these here. Now, magnification of body cells reveals so many stem cells. Scientists are looking at the body and they're finding stem cells on everywhere, on every issue. You know about a whale. A whale is in the ocean, a big old whale. And attaching itself to the whale are all sorts of little shell type things. You know, they clamp onto the whale and they ride around with the whale. Pretty soon the whale's got so many of them, it kills them. But the thing is, they're parasites. They clamp onto the whale and they get a ride. And pretty soon they get... Now, is the whale sick? No. The whale has those external things hanging on to him that is causing a problem. So when the scientists give the whale a portion of strychnine, not really, but something, some chemical, the shells drop away because they don't want the odor that the skin is giving off that they're clinging to. And they fall away. This is done in many different areas, but I'm using the whale as an illustration here. Now, all of those shells that hang on there are just dropping away. Now, is the whale sick? No. Can it kill the whale? Sure. But is the whale sick? No. Why does the whale have all those things on him? Because his chemical plant is not perfect. Does every whale have these crustaceans in great abundance cling to them? No. Only a few. Only a few who are missing some of that vital juice in their system that makes their body intolerable for those creatures to hang on. You know? It's very simple. Very simple. So you don't take a knife and chop them off and clean them off. You just do it. Now, how many of you have ever gone into a river where there were bloodsuckers? And these are little things that, you know, like little other bloodsuckers. They're little worms that, yes, that hang on. And how do you get them off? What'd you get them? What?
I didn't know when it went off. I didn't remember.
Oh, you don't remember. But when we were kids, what we did, we'd come out of the lake after walking around in the weeds and getting all bloodsuckers all over our legs and our toes, and we'd go up to Mother. She'd say, sit down. And she'd take the salt shaker, dum, 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 and she'd shake salt all over them, and they'd pop right off because they didn't like the salt. And they were gone. It didn't hurt us. It didn't leave any scars. It wasn't any bother. But you see, if you know, if you try to pull them off, and if you try to do this, how do you take a tick off when you get a tick on you or a dog or something? You just light a match and let it go out and take the burnt end while it's still hot and touch the tick, and he backs right off. He backs right off. He takes his teeth with him. He doesn't leave them in the animal. But you see, these are simple things that we have learned to do to modify problems that we have. Now, the same thing is true with the whale. The same thing is true with our body. Our body is a temple of the living spirit. Our body is perfect. Our body has no problem. Something invades our body and is a problem. We need to change the mental, physical attitude of our body so that it goes away, so it's no longer there. Now, we can't take salt and pour it on the ulcer or on the tumor or whatever, but what we can do is stop putting thought to it. Stop recognizing it and say, I'm whole and perfect, I'm whole and perfect, I'm whole and perfect, I'm whole and perfect, I'm whole and perfect. Just pound it into your system till it goes through your whole body. And what it does, it reawakens those chemical fluids in your body which have not been functioning properly to cause those things that were negative, like a cancer or a tumor or whatever, to be thrown off. It works. It works. I've been privileged to be present many times where it worked, but it works. But it takes a shock treatment almost to get to the point to have it work. It takes a treatment that it's life and death to have it work. And some people just don't want it to work because they've already resigned themselves to die. And as they resign themselves to die, then they want to die. And for you to get them back on the boat again and back thinking about living is not fair to them because that's not what they want to do. And whether we live or whether we die, it makes no difference. It makes no difference whether you are healthy or sick. It makes no difference whether you're rich or poor. It makes no difference whether you got... Because whatever you are, you put the cause in motion for it. Now, do you want that experience? Do you want to be sick or healthy or wealthy or whatever you want to be? What do you want? As a man thinketh in his heart, so is he. What are you thinking about? Are you thinking about wholeness and right action and peace? Are you thinking about whatever you say you want? Then start putting those thoughts in motion. And when you put those thoughts in motion, now, I have 10,000 stem cells born in my brain every day. Okay, boys, got a job for you to do. I want you to go through my brain and I want you to scour it out. I want only the original purity and integrity in my brain. Only the original purity and integrity. My original genius, my original majesty. That's all I want in my brain. They say, that's easy. You know, that's easy. And what do they do? Like the whale that is given this tincture of fluid that readjusts the chemical balance of his body, casting off these creatures that are clinging to it. Interesting. So the brain, when you say, return to the original purity and integrity, your brain casts off all of those cells that are no longer beneficial. They go anyhow. You have a complete resurgence of your brain every year or two anyhow. Scientists used to think that the brain didn't grow any new cells. But now they realize the brain grows as many new cells as the rest of the body, if not even more and more quickly. Because the brain is the center of the greatest amount of activity. As we said the other day, the brain has the greatest amount of blood of the entire body. If there is one quart of blood in the body, or let's say if there's four quarts of blood in the body, then three quarts are in the brain, and one quart runs the rest of the body, so to speak. But it's amazing. It's really amazing. It's hard for us to conceive of what's going on in the brain as far as the physical aspect, because there are so many tubes up there. There's so many capillaries. There's so many veins and arteries of blood that are manifesting in our brain and carrying out the work. And what is the blood system for the brain? It's both a nourisher and it is a cooler. It is a coolant for the brain. Without blood going through the brain would burn up. Because it's like an engine. It needs to have its radiator. It needs to have something to cool it. Well, that's what the brain needs to do. Now, you look it up in any book and it'll say that, but very subtly. It says it subtly because that's not really what people are interested in knowing. But little by little, people are interested in knowing these things. Now, are you ready for that step? Are you ready to experience that? Well, you can. And when you do, then great things happen. What sort of time did we schedule ourselves here with this here? What are you going to tell me? So, we schedule ourselves for 10. And then at 10:30 we start our next lecture. So I'm going to take another minute and explain the other two parts of what we're going to talk about. talk about there. Studies show how stem cells affect other non-stem cells near it. When you have the single stem cell put into the brain, and there are 10,000 of them, undifferentiated stem cells in the brain every day, each single stem cell affects all the other non-stem cells, which are the old cells, and revitalizes them, as it revitalizes the liver and the heart and the lungs. It revitalizes them and wakes them up to their original purity and integrity, and it wakes them up to their what? What does it wake them up to? To who they really are. To who they really are. Beautiful. Now this other one, undifferentiated stem cells is a panacea, cure-all, universal remedy, magic potion to any cell near it. Isn't that true? No. That's what's going on inside of you and me. That's what's going on inside of all of this magic stuff is going on there that's changing everything. But we don't encourage it. How often have you encouraged your son or daughter to take apart the clock in their bedroom? Or take apart the TV set or the computer? How often have you encouraged them to do that? That's $500, that's $1,000, that's a lot of money, my goodness sake. But if you encourage them, what would happen? They would develop their genius so fast and so beautiful. Well, they might mess it up a couple times, but they would develop it so fast that in no time at all, they would be such a wealthy genius that you could buy dozens of computers, you know. But encourage them to be the genius, but encourage yourself. Encourage yourself to be the genius too, because you can.
The young ones are yet not differentiated, and we are not encouraging them to, to change the entire around.
Yeah, but you don't think of that. You merely think of bringing it in, because if you start manipulating the brain and the cells as to what they should be doing, you haven't the vaguest idea how to be helpful, because our mind. Our thinking system doesn't think right. This person over here has a tumor, not you. This person has a tumor, and that person says, well, the thing that's going to help me the most is to get that tumor out of me. Well, not at all. The thing that's going to help them the most is to realize that they're whole and perfect, and that their body is functioning normally and perfectly and wonderfully, and when that is so, the tumor will disappear because it's not getting any attention anymore. Whereas if the tumor were cut out and those thoughts are still there about you being sick and you being having problems and so forth, then you have another tumor. That's why cancer is so terrible. It just goes choo 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 in everything, you know. And when you start saying, I'm whole and perfect, then poof, the cancer is gone. Everywhere. But if you just say, I got the cancer here, but you didn't get it here. I got the cancer here, but you didn't get it here, you know. When I work with people who are cancer patients, I talk with them about the idea that you're whole and perfect. Don't zero in on any one place just because you happen to be able to see it. Don't zero in. Just zero in on the whole body as being whole and perfect. Everything. Yeah, but the doctor says this. The doctor is only telling you what appearances tell him. Now, let's give the doctor some new appearances to see. And I work with people very strongly on these things. And when they cooperate, what miracles happen to them. Okay, let's take our pause and at 10:30 come back for our next lecture 5. And you have your notes there. You can read them if you wish. So we will see you in a little bit. I love you.